Morning, guys. How are you doing? Good. It's kind of fun to be in a new place, isn't it? This is an amazing work in progress. I know it's not totally done, but you guys have done a fantastic job looking around from what this was a year ago. We were here a year ago in July, and from what it was then to what it is now, this is really, really sweet. Hey, it's good to be back, and Jarvis keeps asking me back, and I keep saying yes, so I'm back again. Sorry if you've seen me before, but I'm going to say some of the same stuff I've said before. If you've never heard me before, act surprised. If you've heard me before, still act surprised, okay? It is great to be here. I have my family with me. Actually, a few of my kids, three of our kids are there, and my wife is here. Super fun to have them travel with me occasionally and come to places like this. A little background about myself. I grew up in the Twin Cities, grew up in Crystal, and went to North Central as youth pastor for 18 years. Now I'm a home missionary with the Assemblies of God, working with Youth Alive and also AIM, which is the missions department of our district. Kind of a fun thing that I get to do. Around the state, there are a little over 700 public schools, middle schools, junior highs, and high schools. And we have been in a little over 450 of those 700 schools. We've been in 750 schools doing presentations, but 450 distinct schools. During the day, it's a non-religious presentation. We have a series of different speakers that are with us. We have bands, we have DJs, things like that. It's just kind of a fun thing. During the day, it's a non-religious presentation. We talk about three main things. We talk about the importance of choices, how that affects your future. We talk about the importance of character and how that defines who you are. And also, we challenge students to always pursue their dreams. Those are kind of the main themes that we always have. We talk about bullying, other things like that. But it's a great thing during the day. And at night, when we have a chance to work with local churches, we invite students to come back. And historically, over the past 16 years, 29% of the students come back at night to hear the gospel. And of those 29%, 26% respond to a message of Jesus Christ. So literally people all across the state, from way up in the northwest to all the way up by Canada, all the way down to Iowa. And it's just a really, really great time. This past spring, since I was with you, I think in February or March, I think it was in March, we went to a place that we've been trying to get into for about 9 years. And that'd be St. Cloud Tech. St. Cloud Tech is becoming a rougher school. There's a very influx of a lot of ethnic groups, and there's a lot of racial division there. And I was sitting in the front row of their auditorium watching, kind of on the side, had my arm on the seat so I could watch people and them not knowing I was doing that, you know, that kind of a thing. And I was watching this whole group of Somali girls that were just loving. Reggie Dabbs is our speaker, and he's talking about just the whole idea of pursuing your dreams, and that's not exactly something they hear all the time. And it was talking about just race, and it was an amazing time. And I've tried, and I've been there, and I've been to the principal's office. I've called, I've emailed. We've had students go, and I've been with students. And finally, just by God's grace, it opened up, and it was an amazing time at St. Cloud Tech. We've been in different inner-city schools this year. One of the schools we were in, right at the end of the presentation, they left, and then everyone kind of ran out. We're like, well, everyone's excited to get out of school. No, there was a big fight in the street, and the police came and shut down the street. So we loaded our equipment under very good guard that day. It was just kind of interesting. We've also been to a place called Warba. How many of you know where Warba's at? Up by Grand Rapids. Warba's not a very big town. When I checked, there was 103 people in town, and there's a school, there's a charter school with 88 students, and we go to big places with thousands of students. We also go to places with 88 students, and we're in Warba that day, and it's a charter school, kind of a rough crowd, and we're there the whole day, and as we, from the day to the night, I've realized that someone stole my brand new Beats wireless headphones out of my backpack in our truck. And I was mad, okay? I went to the service that night, and there was a gospel presentation. Terrence was our speaker, and I had a really bad attitude. And I know I'm not supposed to do that, but I had a bad attitude that night. And once again, as I've told stories before, God just kind of crushed me again. And I was so amazed at what God did that night. As I watched Terrence, our speaker, talk about just his dad. His dad was a very abusive dad, alcoholic dad. He fought his dad, got beat up by his dad many times. His dad pretty much ignored him, and he's got an amazing story if you've ever heard his story. His dad eventually died alone of AIDS. And Terrence talks about the fact that he never had a dad, and he talks about that day, you know, the importance of a dad hug. And I watched almost every student get a hug from Terrence. And that night he talked more just not about a father on earth, but he talked about his heavenly father and when he came to realize that a heavenly father actually loves him, actually cares about him. And I listened once again, and I'm sitting back by the soundboard. I'm just sobbing. I'm just apologizing and saying, I'm so sorry, Lord. Who cares? It's a stupid pair of headphones. And that night, one of the coolest things I've ever saw is, you know, 88 students, there's about 50 that came back that night. They brought some parents, and someone brought their mom, and then someone brought their grandma, too. And I was sitting in the back. I watched a lady in her mid-50s go up and tap Terrence on the shoulder and motion him over. And Terrence came over and sat between two ladies, one in her mid-50s, one in their mid-70s. A mom and a grandma that a kid got came home and was so excited about what was going on in school. And I watched Terrence pray with them in Warba, Minnesota. And I was like, all right, God, I'm terrible. I have this bad attitude, but yet you show up and you do crazy cool things. So that's one of the things I get to do. Also, as Pastor Jarvis mentioned, I get to do mission trips. And this year we have 10 AIM trips that are traveling around the world, and it's been fun to be a part of missions. It's something I love, mobilizing students. We just got back from camp, and I hear some of the guys, I don't know where they went, we're at camp last week at Lake Geneva. There are a little over 706 high school students, and I say this to every high school student now when I have a chance to speak. I always say, every one of you needs to go on a missions trip, every single person, because there's something about it. It becomes not about you. It's all about others. And you step outside your comfort zone, and God starts to do things that you can't do for yourself. And you become dependent on God, and God starts to direct your life and guide your life. And I think every student should go on a mission trip. But let me throw this out to Watermark Church, if I can, Jarvis. All of you should go on a missions trip, whether it be taking a road trip to Green Bay, whether it be going to Haiti, whether it be going to El Salvador or someplace, put that in your bucket list to do. I need to go on a mission trip, because there's something about stepping outside your comfort zone and realizing, what can I do to help others? You're living out the gospel. You're just not giving it an offering. You're living out the gospel. I think every one of you should go on a missions trip. Amen, Pastor Jarvis? Amen. All right, thank you. Hey, this morning I want to talk just real briefly about a few kings in the Old Testament. Doesn't that sound exciting? Yes, it does. So super fun. Solomon is a dude in the Old Testament. If you've never read about Solomon and King David, his dad, you should start reading in 1 Kings chapter 1 and even before that. But Solomon comes on the scene. He's anointed by King David, and God appears to him in a dream after he gets anointed. And God in this dream asks him, what do you want me to give you? And he said, I want wisdom. So God gives him wisdom. And 1 Corinthians 4, verse 29 says this, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sands of the seashore. If you continue reading about Solomon, you'll see that he not only had great wisdom, he was a brilliant engineer. He was involved in arts. He wrote 300 proverbs, 1,005 musical pieces. He was an expert in botany, zoology, just an incredible thing. Solomon asked for wisdom, and God truly gave it to him. Can God give wisdom to us? The rhetorical answer would be yes. God can give us wisdom if we simply ask. There was a guy by the name of George Washington Carver that was born in 1860. He was a guy who who had asked God to help him. Let me just read this quote. It says, "When I was young, I said to God, 'Give me the mysteries of the universe.' But he responded, 'That was for me and for me alone. Well, God, give me the mysteries of the peanut.' Well, George, that's more your size." And then he says this in his autobiography, "And then God told me." He prayed for wisdom into the mysteries of the peanut, and he came up with 105 ways to prepare peanuts for consumption. He figured out uses for the shell, the oil, all this crazy thing. And he did it because God gave him wisdom when he said, "God, this is what I want." And God answered that prayer. I think God gives us wisdom in our time of need. God gives us wisdom if we simply just ask. You know, I think God gives us wisdom when we're in right standing with him too. And I have a story where I was on a missions trip in Thailand. And it's kind of a fun place to go. And we were at this crazy elephant farm, and we watched this crazy elephant demonstration in the water, and yeah, it sounds really cool. Yeah, it's okay. And then we went on an elephant ride through the jungle, and for the first 2 minutes, it was the coolest thing I had ever been in. And then for the next 2 hours, it was the worst thing I'd ever been in. It was, you know, you think it's so fun, but when they're walking and you're just getting thrown around like a rag doll, it's awesome. You should try it at least once, okay? And then just tap out and say, "I'm done." But we're going through the jungle, and we walk up the river, and we get on these long bamboo rafts. And this bamboo raft that we're on is about 16 feet long, and there's a Thai young gentleman on the back with a really long pole, probably about a 12-foot pole that he pushes in the mud and pushes us down the river. So I'm sitting on this raft, and I have this really cool bamboo hat about this wide. It's about 110 degrees. A nice breeze is blowing, and right in front of me, our youth pastor and his wife, and I'm sitting on one seat in the back, and then this guy is on the way in the back. As I'm sitting there enjoying this, you know, there's some really nice black water moccasins that we saw earlier, one about 9 feet wide, long and about this wide. It was awesome. So my mind's racing, as you can tell, and I don't like a lot of things, but snakes are one of those things I'm just not a fan of. So all of my mind's racing, and I'm just enjoying it. We're talking, laughing, and I'm sitting down. Let me just sit like this. I'm sitting down, and I have a backpack in, and as I'm sitting down, I'm leaning forward kind of on my arms. As I'm doing that, my backpack, the strap starts to kind of blow in the wind, and it's kind of moving on my arm. I'm like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." I look down on my arm. It wasn't on my backpack. Here, a snake had dropped onto the raft and had wrapped itself around my arm, and it was sticking up like this on my arm. And then I tore off my shirt and ran. No, I didn't do that, but I thought I would have. But I was incredibly calm, and here's my exact quote. Okay, and it's church-worthy, Pastor Jarvis. I saw it, and I was like, "Huh." That's all I did. And then I did this, and it fell off. And I was incredibly calm, and I sat there. I watched it go behind me. I watched it go behind me, and the guy in the back, remember the Thai gentleman? He took his 12-foot staff, and he kind of moved it off into the ground, into the water. And I looked back at him, and he did this. And every time I looked back, he'd be, I'm like, "Well, that's kind of weird." Didn't figure out what it was. When I got back to the hostel we're staying, I couldn't find it on the internet. We went later on to we're at our Border Books on a youth retreat or a youth scavenger hunt or something. And I was walking through and I was like, "Oh, let me check out Poisonous Snakes of the World." Open it up and I'm flipping through the pages and bam, there it is. Green tree viper. I had a green tree viper on my arm, only about this long. Not a big deal, only 60% die. The other ones kind of feel like because it attacks your central nervous system. And I look back and I think, you know what? I'm going to call that wisdom. Is that okay? Because why would I ever think, okay, let me think. He's wrapped around this way, and it's lefty-loosey, righty-tighty, and I have to. But I was sitting there, and I think the wisdom of God just hit me, and I did this. And then I just had the peace of God as I watched it go off into the water. Now, can I guarantee God's going to do that for you? No, I can't say that. But I think that if you ask for wisdom, God's going to give you wisdom in whatever situation you're at. You know what? George Washington Carver asked for wisdom, and then I love this phrase, and he, being God, told me. Wouldn't that be awesome if you could say that with confidence? If you have a situation where you don't know what to do, and you can look back in your life maybe 5 years later and say, I had no idea what to do, but I asked God, and he told me. That's the wisdom that Solomon had. That's the wisdom that I think God has promised you. I can't guarantee he's going to help you in that way, but I've seen that in my life. I don't have many other snake stories, but I have a lot of other stories. I know you're very happy I don't have any more snake stories. You're doing the willy jillies kind of a thing in the front. So wait, I do have one more snake story. No, I'm just kidding. But it's one of those things, I can't guarantee it, but I've seen it true in my life. When I ask for God for wisdom, God gives it. And I love that phrase. And he told me. If you're at a point in your life that you need wisdom, how about you simply do this? Why don't you ask someone to pray with you that God will give you wisdom? Confidently, and looking back, I believe you're going to be able to say, and he told me. Second thing we see from a king in the Old Testament is Hezekiah, a few books later, 2 Chronicles chapter 31, verses 21. It says, Hezekiah sought his God wholeheartedly. As a result, he was very successful. Now, this is kind of an eerie thing. Last night we were talking, one of my sons is not here. He's back. He's an employee of Domino's, you know, so he wasn't able to make it today. But we were saying, wouldn't it be horrible? Actually, I wasn't saying, some of my family said, wouldn't it be horrible if all of us got in a car accident and we all died? Don't you hate those kind of conversations? But they come up every once in a while. But saying that, and I thought, this is what I'm saying this morning. If that ever happens to me, whoever finds me, put this on my tombstone. Bobby sought his God wholeheartedly, and a result, he was successful. Wouldn't that be a great way to describe your life? Hezekiah was somebody that was known as somebody being very diligent. He worked hard. When he had a plan, he followed through, and he was able to accomplish it. We can look at his life. He was an engineer, a revivalist, a construction genius. He built walls. He built reinforced walls. He dug wells. He dug tunnels. He dug secret tunnels. But he did all these things, and his life is really, really one word would be describing him, diligent, or somebody who works hard. Oswald Sanders, in his book, Spiritual Leadership, says, the true spiritual leader seeks to put into life more than he ever seeks to pull out of it. I think that's a profound statement that we can learn from Hezekiah. To put more into life than you expect to get out of it. I think that's totally true in your marriage. If you think about the other one, your spouse, more than yourself, things go a lot better. When you're selfish, things don't always go so well. You can think about that working in the church. If you walk in and you expect everyone to focus on you, it's a lot different than you walking in and focusing on everything else. I think it's an attitude that Hezekiah had, and we can learn from Hezekiah in that way. The last person is Josiah. Josiah is somebody found just a few chapters later, 2 Chronicles chapter 34. Hezekiah, verse 2, of Hezekiah 34 says this, he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and followed the ways of his father David, not turning aside to the right or to the left. Seeing King Josiah comes on the scene, his father, King Ammon, was a very evil man. He ruled there for less than 2 years, and his inner circle of kind of his cabinet members decided he was so evil that they wanted to end his reign. In fact, the first part of chapter 33 says, and he did evil in the eyes of the Lord as his father had done. So this inner circle of friends decided to take care of business, and they ended up executing him. And he had an 8-year-old son. And there's something that they saw in him, some incredible characteristics in him, and they decided to appoint him king. At 8 years old, Josiah became king. At 16, he began to seek God. At 20, something happens. It kind of a switch flips in his mind, and he starts to tear down altars and tearing down idols and burning poles of worship, and he destroyed the sacred altars. And if you look at the description of what he does in 2 Chronicles 34, it says, he uses verbs like destroying, ordering it to be demolished, he smashed, he scattered, and he pretty much ends the reign of sin in the country, and he establishes a new order. In fact, 1 Kings chapter 13, which is more than 300 years before and 14 generations before, there's a nameless prophet that comes on the scene and points to Jeroboam, who is the king at that time, and he says, and there's a man that is coming, and he will burn the crushed bones of your priests on these altars, and his name will be Josiah. And Josiah was somebody that stepped into prophetic destiny. He was somebody that knew as a young kid right from wrong, and then he started to seek God wholeheartedly, and then he became somebody of passion, and he didn't like snap and start to do crazy things. Well, he kind of did if you were not following the Lord. And he started destroying things, and he started breaking things down, and he said, not on my watch. And he cleaned out all of Judah at that time. And with that, he established a new order. And I believe God is raising up just this whole new generation. I'd call it a Josiah class generation. There are students all across Minnesota and all across the world that are becoming more passionate about God than ever before. In Minnesota, you maybe have known, you've heard this before. This last year, students in Minnesota, including people in this church led by Pastor Ben, gave a little bit of money to Speed the Light. Speed the Light is our missions project through the youth of Minnesota. They buy equipment, they buy printers, computers, cars, projectors, whatever it is, anything to speed the light, to project the light, to proclaim the message of Jesus around the world. In Minnesota, last year, students gave a little over $1.1 million. The year before, they gave over $1 million. The year before, they gave $931,000. So the past 3 years, students in Minnesota, including students in this church, gave over $3 million. It's pretty amazing. And there's a whole kind of a thriving, growing group of people that are deciding to do this thing called gap years. Gap years between high school and college, or between college and the full-time workforce, where they're going to say, all right, God, I'll give you 1 year of my life, but what do you want me to do? There are students being mobilized all across the country and all across the world that are deciding to give at least 1 year of their life full-time to what God is calling them to do, to go end injustice, to go fight for those that can't fight for themselves, to go try to bring people out of poverty, to try to build homes, or whatever it might be. I believe God is raising up this Josiah class generation, and it's really because students are tired of just sitting by, and they want to do something that matters. And I want to throw that out to you today. It's just, are you doing something that you feel matters? Does your life matter? Yes, it does. But are you doing something with the skills and talents and abilities that God has given you to do something that matters? And you might think, well, all I can do is paint. I think that matters. All I can do is cut wood. Yep, I think that matters. All I can do is help in the nursery. You know what? That matters. All I can do is go on a missions trip. That matters. What I think God is calling us to do today is just not to sit by. Well, let's start getting that mindset. I want to do something that matters. King Josiah was a person of passion, and he let his passion spill out not just to our people around him, but to a whole nation, and he ended a cycle of sin, and he started once again a cycle of blessing. I think God is calling us to do that in our world. Just in closing, there's two things I think that separate and destroy the passion for God in our life. One's really pretty easy to understand. It's called sin. Pastor Jarvis talks about how sin, I'm sure, it separates you from a relationship with Christ. And some of you this morning, as they're worshiping, and thank you for leading us in worship, is fantastic. They're talking about freedom. They're talking about the altar. We have a cross that signifies where our penalty was paid at the cross. But there's a second thing that I think and that separates and destroys passion from God. And I probably am more in this category. And I'm going to say, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but the word is cynicism. I've seen it before, and that doesn't work. I remember when, and that used to be great. Cynicism's all about comparing yourself most of the time to the past. And I think some of us, and I need to be reminded of this morning, that we can choose to look at the past and be cynics, or we can choose to look to what God has called us to do and to say, you know what, Lord, I'm going to do something that matters.